This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of osteopenia and osteoporosis from the basic science section on orthobullets.com. The main characteristics common to both osteopenia and osteoporosis are that they are both considered age-related decreases in bone mass secondary to uncoupling of osteoclast osteoblast activity, and they are both characterized by disrupted microarchitecture. With respect to epidemiology, 10 million Americans and 200 million people worldwide have osteoporosis. 34 million Americans have osteopenia. 1.5 million osteoporotic fractures occur each year. 700,000 are vertebral fractures. 300,000 are hip fractures, and 200,000 are wrist fractures. As far as demographics, the male-female ratio is 1 to 4. Men have a higher prevalence of secondary osteoporosis at 60%, and this includes hypogonadism, glucocorticoid excess, and alcoholism. Postmenopausal osteoporosis is highest in women aged 50 to 70 years old. Senile osteoporosis begins after 70 years old. Secondary osteoporosis can begin at any age. As far as fractures, wrist fractures occur most commonly at age 50 to 60 years old. Vertebral fractures occur most commonly at age 60 to 70 years old. And hip fractures occur most commonly at age 70 to 80 years old. As far as the location of fractures related to osteopenia and osteoporosis, they are most commonly associated in the vertebral body, then the hip, then the wrist. As far as risk factors, numerous drugs are associated with an increased risk of osteoporosis in adults, including oral corticosteroids, androgen deprivation therapy, aromatase inhibitors, protease inhibitors, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, prolactin-raising anti-epileptic agents, and many cytotoxic agents. Additionally, a number of disease states are associated with osteoporosis, including endocrinopathies such as hyperparathyroidism, thyrotoxicosis, type 1 diabetes, hypogonadism, chronic glucocorticoid therapy, malnutrition, malabsorption states, chronic immobilization, rheumatoid arthritis, alcoholism, vitamin D deficiency, and multiple myeloma. As far as the pathophysiology for osteopenia and osteoporosis, these are quantitative, not qualitative, disorders of bone mineralization. Specific factors include failure to build peak bone mass as a young adult and bone loss later in life. Associated conditions include fragility fractures, and these can direct the relationship between the degree of bone loss and fractures. Kyphotic deformities can arise from vertebral body fractures. Pelvic ring insufficiency fractures are most often treated with bed rest and analgesia. And remember that total hip arthroplasty with constrained components are a risk factor for fragility fractures. The review article by Vanderschot describes that constrained liners used with total hip arthroplasty create a mechanical constraint that redistributes more force to the pelvic ring. With respect to prognosis of osteopenia and osteoporosis, prior fragility fracture is the strongest predictor of a future fracture from low-energy trauma. Vertebral fractures are associated with a 15% increase in 5-year mortality and are also associated with increased morbidity, specifically back pain, loss of height, poor balance, and/or respiratory compromise secondary to restrictive lung disease and/or pneumonia. A history of one vertebral fracture results in a 5-fold increased risk of a second vertebral fracture and a 5-fold increased risk of hip fracture. History of 2 vertebral fractures is the strongest indicator for further compression fractures in postmenopausal women. Hip fractures are associated with a 20% increase in mortality. Men have higher mortality rates following hip fractures than women. Hip fractures are associated with increased morbidity. Specifically, these patients have a reduced quality of life, and only 1/3 of patients with hip fractures return to their previous level of function. A history of one hip fracture results in up to a 10-fold increased risk of a second hip fracture. A FRAC score is the World Health Organization fracture risk assessment tool that calculates 10-year risk of hip fracture and 10-year risk of major osteoporosis-related fracture based on the following variables: age, sex, personal history of fracture, low BMI, oral steroid use, secondary osteoporosis, parental history of hip fracture, smoking status, and alcohol intake. With respect to classification, osteoporosis is typically divided into two types, type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is the postmenopausal type, and type 2 is the senile type. With respect to age group, type 1 osteoporosis is typically seen in patients 50 to 70 years old, while type 2 is seen in patients greater than 70 years old. As far as the bones affected, type 1 patients have almost exclusively trabecular bone involvement, while type 2 patients have both trabecular and cortical bone involvement, but trabecular bones are still more commonly involved than cortical bones. With respect to bones fractured, type 1 patients have mostly distal radius and vertebral fractures, while type 2 patients mostly have hip and pelvis fractures. As far as the effect on calcium, in type 1 patients, there is a net negative change in calcium levels because of decreased intestinal absorption and increased urinary excretion of calcium, while in type 2 patients, there is just poor calcium absorption. Finally, with respect to the effect of vitamin D, type 1 patients have reduced circulating levels of total, but not free, 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D, while the effect on type 2 patients is not entirely clear. As far as labs in the workup of a patient for osteopenia and osteoporosis, you may get a 25-hydroxyvitamin D level, as there are low 25-hydroxycholecalciferol or 25-hydroxyvitamin D levels in patients sustaining low-energy fractures. Vitamin D3 is converted to 25-hydroxyvitamin D in the liver and then becomes the active hormone form, 1,25-hydroxyvitamin D, or the inactive hormone form, 24,25-hydroxyvitamin D, in the kidney. Piper et al. Conducted a study looking at the values of 25-hydroxyvitamin D in 1,800 patients that recently sustained a hip fracture. They found that 51% of patients were at or below the clinically meaningful threshold of 15 nanograms per milliliter. They concluded that physicians should be encouraged to check and monitor patients' serum levels of 25-hydroxyvitamin D. With respect to imaging, radiographs are indicated for osteoporosis when there is suspicion of fracture, loss of height, and/or pain in the thoracic or lumbar spine. Recommended views include a lateral spine radiograph as well as an AP pelvis or hip. Findings may include thinned cortices, loss of trabecular bone, kyphosis, and/or codfish vertebra. As far as sensitivity and specificity, plain films are usually not helpful unless there is greater than 30% bone loss. DEXA scans, and DEXA of course stands for Dual Energy X-ray Absorptometry, and it's usually performed in the lumbar spine where it measures bone mineral density from L2 to L4 and compiles scores. It's also performed in the hip where it measures bone mineral density from the femoral neck, trochanter, and intertrochanteric region and compiles scores. With respect to sensitivity and specificity, DEXA scans tend to be the most accurate with the least radiation exposure. Some terms to be familiar with when talking about DEXA scans includes bone mineral density, which is an absolute patient-specific score determined from certain anatomic areas. A T-score, which is a bone mineral density relative to normal young match controls, and a Z-score is a bone mineral density relative to similar age patients. Osteopenia is defined as L2 to L4 lumbar density of 1 to 2.5 standard deviations, that is a T-score of -1 to -2.5 below the peak bone mass of a 25-year-old individual. And osteoporosis is defined as L2 to L4 lumbar density of greater than 2.5 standard deviations or a T-score of less than -2.5 below the peak bone mass of a 25-year-old individual. As far as other studies, a biopsy after tetracycline labeling may be helpful to rule out osteomalacia, but this is rarely done. Remember that osteomalacia is a metabolic bone disease where defective mineralization results in a large amount of unmineralized osteoid and is a qualitative defect as opposed to a quantitative defect like osteoporosis and osteopenia. If you did do a biopsy on an osteoporotic bone, histology may show thin trabeculae, decreased osteon size, enlarged eversion and marrow spaces, and changes in the osteoclast ruffled border. An increased osteoclast ruffled border is seen with PTH, 1,25-hydroxyvitamin D, and prostaglandin E. A flattened ruffled border is seen with bisphosphonates and calcitonin. The two major conditions on the differential is osteoporosis and osteomalacia, and it's important to know the key differences between them. Osteoporosis is defined as reduced bone mass with normal mineralization, while osteomalacia has variable bone mass with reduced mineralization. With respect to age, we talked about osteoporosis having two types, postmenopausal or type 1, as well as elderly or type 2. Osteomalacia can occur at any age. As far as etiology, osteoporosis can be secondary to endocrine abnormalities, age, inactivity, alcohol, calcium deficiency, or it can be idiopathic, while osteomalacia can be secondary to a vitamin D deficiency, abnormal vitamin D pathway, hypophosphatemia, hypophosphatasia, or renal tubular acidosis. With respect to symptoms and signs, osteoporosis patients will have pain and tenderness at the fracture site, while in osteomalacia, patients will have generalized bone pain and tenderness. As far as X-ray findings, osteoporosis will have axial fracture predominance, while osteomalacia will have appendicular fracture predominance, and they also tend to be symmetric, and they include pseudofractures, otherwise known as looser zones. With respect to serum calcium, this will be normal in osteoporosis and low or normal in osteomalacia. Similarly, with respect to serum phosphate, this will be normal in osteoporosis and low or normal in osteomalacia. As far as alkaline phosphatase, this will be normal in osteoporosis and elevated in osteomalacia, except in the setting of hypophosphatasia. With respect to urinary calcium, this will be high or normal in osteoporosis, while it would be normal or low in osteomalacia, however, will be high in the setting of hypophosphatasia. Finally, with respect to a bone biopsy, tetracycline labeling will be normal in osteoporotic bone, while it will be abnormal in osteomalacia bone. Moving on to treatment of osteoporosis, non-operative management will involve lifestyle modification and supplementation with things like calcium and vitamin D, as well as pharmacologic treatment in certain cases. According to the 2008 National Osteoporosis Foundation guidelines, pharmacological treatment for osteoporosis should be considered if patients are postmenopausal women or men greater than age 50 and meet one of the following criteria. 1. They have had a prior hip or vertebral fracture. 2. They have a T-score of negative 2.5 or less at the femoral neck or spine. 3. They have a T-score between -1 and -2.5 at the femoral neck or spine, and a 10-year risk of hip fracture greater than 3% or 10-year risk of major osteoporosis-related fracture greater than 20%. Specific pharmacologic agents include calcium and vitamin D, bisphosphonates, conjugated estrogen progestin hormone replacement, or HRT, estrogen-only replacement, or ERT, salmon calcitonin, which go by the trade names of Fortical or Miacalcin, raloxifene, otherwise known as Avista, and teriparatide, otherwise known as Forteo. Operative management is reserved for operative fractures like hip fractures and distal radius fractures. With respect to osteoporotic vertebral compression fractures, these are the most common type of fragility fractures. Though most of these fractures will heal, many patients will have residual pain and disability despite conservative therapy. Vertebroplasty was once considered a good surgical method of treating these patients. However, vertebroplasty has been shown in randomized controlled trials to have limited efficacy and is no longer considered an indicated procedure in this clinical scenario. Buchbinder et al. Investigated the efficacy of pain reduction by vertebroplasty in patients with painful osteoporotic vertebral fractures. They performed a double-blinded randomized controlled trial with 78 patients comparing vertebroplasty with sham surgery and found that there was no statistically significant reduction in pain between groups at 1 week, 1 month, 3 months, or 6 months. The authors concluded that vertebroplasty provided no beneficial effect in patients with painful osteoporotic vertebral fractures, and they questioned its utility as a treatment for these patients. If a patient with a compression fracture continues to have severe pain symptoms after 6 weeks of non-operative treatment, a kyphoplasty can be considered. However, the recommendation strength by the AAOS is still limited. Kyphoplasty and vertebroplasty are both performed under fluoroscopic guidance. A percutaneous transpedicular approach is used for the cannula. In a vertebroplasty, PMMA is injected directly into cancellous bone without cavity creation. It is performed when cement is more liquid and requires greater pressure because no cavity is created, and therefore the risk of extravasation into the spinal canal is greater. An extravasation of PMMA into the spinal canal can cause neurologic injury. It's important to consider defects in the posterior cortex of the vertebral body if these procedures are done. In a kyphoplasty, on the other hand, a cavity is created with an expansion device like a balloon prior to PMMA injection, which is the major difference between a kyphoplasty and a vertebroplasty. It may be possible to obtain partial reduction of the fracture with balloon expansion, and the kyphoplasty is also performed when cement is more viscous than in the case of a vertebroplasty, and since a cavity is created by balloon expansion in a kyphoplasty, the cement can be injected with less pressure. The pain relief with these procedures is thought to be from elimination of micromotion. Now let's quickly shift gears and talk about bisphosphonates for a moment before we dive into the different pharmacological agents that we mentioned in a bit more detail. Bisphosphonates are indicated for patients that have a history of a hip or a vertebral fracture, a T-score of less than 2.5 at the femoral neck or spine after exclusion of secondary causes, low bone mass that is a T-score between negative 1 and negative 2.5, and a 10-year probability of a hip fracture greater than or equal to 3%, or a 10-year probability of a major osteoporosis-related fracture greater than or equal to 20% based on the WHO algorithm. As far as the general mechanism of bisphosphonates, they accumulate at sites of bone remodeling and are incorporated into the bone matrix and are released into an acid environment once bone is resorbed and are then taken up by an osteoclast. Bisphosphonates decrease osteoclastic bone resorption, flatten the osteoclast ruffled border, and increase osteoclast apoptosis. Bisphosphonates are renally excreted without undergoing metabolism. The exact mechanism of a bisphosphonate depends on the presence of nitrogen on the alkyl chain, which we'll talk more about in a moment. The initiation of appropriate osteoporosis treatment following hip fractures occurs at a surprisingly low rate. Bisphosphonate therapy should be prescribed by the physician who will be following and managing the patient's osteoporosis, and there are improved rates of treatment when coordinated by a treating orthopedic surgeon and a referral to an osteoporosis clinic is made. As far as outcomes for bisphosphonate treatment, alendronate reduces the rate of hip, spine, and wrist fractures by 50%. Risedronate reduces vertebral and non-vertebral fractures by 40% each over 3 years. IV zoledronic acid reduces the rate of spine fractures by 70% and hip fractures by 40% over 3 years. Now, let's talk about all the pharmacologic agents for osteoporosis in a little more detail. Calcium and vitamin D are prophylactic in all patients and seem to be best for type 2 osteoporosis patients. Calcium reduces fracture risk by 34%. Vitamin D supplementation reduces hip fracture risk by 10% and non-vertebral fracture risk by 7%. High-dose vitamin D with a median dose of 800 international units a day reduces hip fractures by 24% and non-vertebral fractures by 30%. Daily calcium and vitamin D requirements are as follows. Age 1 to 3 years old, 500 milligrams per day. Age 4 to 8 years old, 800 milligrams per day. Age 9 to 18 years old, 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams per day. The National Osteoporosis Foundation recommends a daily intake of 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams of calcium and 800 to 1,000 international units of vitamin D for adults over the age of 50. Moving on to non-nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates, these are indicated for patients with a T-score of less than negative 2.5, as well as fragility fractures of the hip in both men and women. The mechanism of non-nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates are that they form a toxic ATP analog, which accumulates in high concentrations in bone due to binding affinity to hydroxyapatite calcium and then ingested by osteoclasts, which inhibits osteoclast function and induces apoptosis. Examples include etidronate, clodronate, and telidronate. Some adverse effects of these drugs to know include esophagitis, dysphagia, gastric ulcers, osteonecrosis of the jaw, and/or atypical subtrochanteric fractures. Nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates are also indicated for patients with a T-score of less than negative 2.5, as well as fragility fractures of the hip in both men and women. The mechanism of nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates is inhibiting farnesyl pyrophosphate synthase, which is a component of the intracellular mevalonate pathway. This is the same pathway responsible for cholesterol production acted on by statins. Examples of nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates include pimidronate, alendronate, otherwise known as Fosamax, risedronate, otherwise known as Actonel, zoledronate, otherwise known as Reclast, and abidronate, otherwise known as Boniva. Some specific effects to be aware of the nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates: alendronate reduces vertebral fractures by 48% and non-vertebral fractures by 47%. Risedronate reduces vertebral fractures by 65% and non-vertebral fractures by 39%. And abidronate reduces vertebral fracture risk by 77%, hip fractures by 41%, and non-vertebral fractures by 15%. The adverse effects of nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates are basically the same as in non-nitrogen-containing bisphosphonates, as they include esophagitis, dysphagia, gastric ulcers, osteonecrosis of the jaw, and or atypical subtrochanteric fractures. With respect to conjugated estrogen progestin hormone replacement, or HRT, this is indicated in women with type 1 osteoporosis within 6 years of menopause. This treatment decreases the risk of hip fracture, but it also can lead to small increases in a woman's risk of breast cancer, coronary artery disease, heart attack, stroke, pulmonary embolism, DVT, and Alzheimer's disease. Estrogen-only replacement, or ERT, is indicated for women with prior hysterectomy. Remember that estrogen receptors are present on osteoblasts and osteoclasts. The big thing to keep in mind is that taking unconjugated estrogen alone increases the risk of endometrial hyperplasia / uterine cancer. Testosterone may be indicated in men with low levels of testosterone, however, this is not yet approved by the FDA for osteoporosis. Salmon calcitonin, otherwise known as Fortical or Miacalcin, is indicated for women greater than 5 years postmenopause, and it has been shown to decrease pain in acute vertebral compression fractures by acting as a neurotransmitter. Calcitonin's mechanism is binding to the membrane receptors on osteoclasts to inhibit resorption. The route of calcitonin administration is injection or nasal spray, as it is destroyed by gastric acid. As far as adverse effects of calcitonin, intranasal calcitonin may cause transient rhinitis, while injectable calcitonin may cause nausea, vomiting, flushing, and/or hypersensitivity reactions. Raloxifene, or Avista, is indicated in women with osteoporosis, and as far as the mechanism, it's an agonist on estrogen receptors in bone and subsequently reduces osteoclast resorption. It also antagonizes estrogen receptors in the breast and subsequently reduces breast cancer risk. Raloxifene is considered a selective estrogen receptor modulator, or a SERM, and it slows bone resorption and mildly increases bone thickness. It's important to remember that it reduces risk of vertebral fractures only, not non-vertebral fractures. Adverse effects can include hot flashes and leg cramps, and remember that it is absolutely contraindicated in patients with venous thromboembolism. Moving on to teriparatide, or Forteo, this is indicated in severe osteoporosis / high fracture risk patients. Parathyroid hormone is a hormone which is produced by the chief cells in the parathyroid gland. Teriparatide is a recombinant protein form of PTH and is the only available anabolic agent in the United States. PTH stimulates bone formation and resorption and can increase or decrease bone mass depending on the mode of administration. Teriparatide, or PTH-134, comprises the first 34 amino acids of the hormone and produces its chief biologic effects. Continuous infusions will result in a persistent elevation of serum PTH concentration that will lead to greater bone resorption and hypercalcemia compared to daily injections. Daily injections lead to only transient increases of PTH, which may stimulate bone formation. Intermittent administration increases the number of osteoblasts, activation of pre-existing osteoblasts, increased differentiation of lining cells to become osteoblasts, and reduced osteoblast apoptosis. Teriparatide also functions by binding to renal tubule cells and also stimulates intestinal absorption of calcium and phosphate. Adverse effects of teriparatide include transient hypercalcemia, dizziness, nausea, and/or headache. It's important to remember that teriparatide is contraindicated in Paget's disease due to a potential osteosarcoma risk. The next medication is denosumab, also known as Prolia. Denosumab is FDA approved for the treatment of osteoporosis in men and women. It inhibits the formation, function, and survival of osteoclasts. It does not bind to calcium hydroxyapatite. At 1 year after the initial dose, tissue levels are not detectable. Denosumab is a human monoclonal antibody against rank L. By binding rank L, it prevents interaction of rank L with rank on osteoclasts and osteoclast precursors and inhibits osteoclast-mediated bone resorption and the formation, function, and survival of osteoclasts. In contrast, bisphosphonates bind to calcium hydroxyapatite in bone and decrease resorption by decreasing function and survival, but not formation of osteoclasts. Denosumab has been shown to reduce vertebral fractures by 68%, hip fractures by 40%, and non-vertebral fractures by 20%. It's typically given as a subcutaneous injection to the arm, thigh, or abdomen. Adverse effects may include arthralgia, nasopharyngitis, and/or back pain. And remember that it is contraindicated in cases of severe hypocalcemia. Finally, romosozumab, otherwise known as Evenity, is indicated in postmenopausal women with history of osteoporotic fracture, multiple risk factors for fracture, or patients who have failed or are intolerant to other osteoporosis therapy. Romosozumab is a humanized monoclonal antibody that activates the Wnt pathway by binding sclerostin. Sclerostin normally inhibits the Wnt pathway, and this subsequently promotes bone formation and inhibits resorption. Romosozumab has been shown to reduce new vertebral fracture by 73% through month 12 and 75% through month 24. It is typically given as a subcutaneous injection monthly. Adverse effects may include hyperostosis, cardiovascular events, osteoarthritis, cancer, osteonecrosis of the jaw, and/or atypical femur fractures. Finally, let's end this review session by talking about some of these drug complications / adverse events a bit more, namely osteonecrosis of the jaw and atypical subtrochanteric transverse stress fractures. Osteonecrosis of the jaw is associated with IV bisphosphonates, but not oral bisphosphonates. The incidence is rare, and the treatment is basically just to stop the bisphosphonates. Atypical subtrochanteric transverse stress fractures may be seen in patients on long-term bisphosphonates. The incidence is rare, and the mechanism is from extremely low bone turnover rates, and this is shown by reduced markers of bone resorption, for example, urinary cross-linked N-telopeptides of type 1 collagen. Treatment of these fractures is obviously operative fixation, typically with an intramedullary nail, and obviously to stop the bisphosphonates. Bisphosphonate-related subtrochanteric and femoral shaft fractures are characterized by 1. Focal lateral cortical thickening, 2. Transverse fracture orientation, 3. A medial spike, also known as cortical beaking, and 4. A simple fracture pattern with lack of comminution. Lennart et al. Performed a retrospective case control study on 41 subtrochanteric fractures. They found that more patients in the subtrochanteric/femoral shaft fracture group were likely to be on bisphosphonates than the intertrochanteric/femoral neck group. They identified a common X-ray pattern in 10 out of the 15 subtrochanteric fractures on bisphosphonates and called it, quote, simple with thick cortices. Schilcher et al. Reviewed the radiographs of 5,342 women and found 172 atypical fractures. The risk was higher with alendronate than risedronate, with a relative risk of 1.9. The risk increased with the duration of use. Compared with men, women had 3.6 times greater risk. They concluded that oral bisphosphonates might do more harm than good if given to patients without indication, and the evidence for prolonged treatment is weak. That's all for this review about osteopenia and osteoporosis. Hopefully that was helpful. Look out for questions related to this topic on this weekend's question session, and hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that review. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.